Butcher and Rich are always with you.
That's just gross.
Open the 98.5 The Sports Hub app, and you'll be listening to Boston's home for sports. It's just that simple.
Okay, you sold me.
For the latest podcasts, for the latest sports news, and for Tutcher and Rich, download the 98.5 The Sports Hub app now.
They're destroying the Hell in the Cell. And my God, don't get them over here where we are. What's going to happen here? Undertaker fighting back. He's fighting back. They're out of bullets, folks. And I don't like it a damn bit. Oh, my God. Look out.
Time has come to relieve that pain, which will be better for me, but not so enjoyable for all of you.
This is the theme.
To what?
To what?
The Godfather. Yeah,
it's the theme to Out of Africa.
Ooh, that's a surprising good take. Hey, Mick Foley's in studio. I don't know anything about wrestling. Big Time Wrestling returns to McCoy Stadium tonight at 8 o'clock. Mick Foley, we are two peas in a pod. I take no heed of my personal appearance, nor do you. And you have a fanny pack on.
I do.
I know.
That's my way of saying I just don't care what anyone thinks about me anymore.
That's it. I'm exactly the same way.
I've heard it called a man satchel to try to sound more manly, but that just sounds worse, doesn't it?
It's just a fanny pack, you know?
What does mankind keep in his fanny pack?
Well, let me say, he keeps a custom... custom made. Jeez,
a lot of
Cactus Jack
of
wallet there.
Okay.
Pack of protein bar. Phone.
Your phone.
Reading glasses.
Oh, God.
Calligraphy markers.
Calligraphy markers.
In case I need to write a nice handwritten letter. Uh-huh. You never know when that can come in handy.
Well, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, and then some things, a little antifungal cream. Charger. I've got front and bottom, from top and bottom teeth in here.
Oh,
and,
you do carry your teeth in your
and three guitar picks from Nita Strauss. So you never know what you'll need in there.
Okay, so now is that you? Do you bust that out when it's time for eating? Like, can you eat with the teeth that you have?
No, I bust it out if I'm on television.
Oh, okay.
Well, you're lucky because 2 weeks ago we were.
We were.
Yeah, well, it's on radio now. Yeah.
That's right. Okay, so you can indeed eat with it. You have no problems eating without putting the fake teeth in. Right.
I have trouble eating ears of corn. I leave a little string there, but I do okay. I've been dealing with it for a long time now.
Well, there's one thing real quick before we get into like all the good wrestling stuff, and of course you return to McCoy Stadium tonight. There is one thing that you and Fred have in common, and that is you are both huge fans of the TV show Boy Meets World.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen many episodes of Boy Meets. I've seen them all.
Have you seen them all?
The one that I guest starred on.
Yes, I have. That was the one where like the two bullies.
No, that was Vader. Leon White was
okay. He was. In
he
that
was
one.
Also on there. I refereed the big match between. The boys, the men and the women, to determine who got the apartment.
Okay. And that was a later one.
Set off a lifelong friendship between me and Topanga.
Really?
Yeah.
Because was the tall redhead involved in that one?
Of course she was.
Yeah, she's become very attractive in a little
strange.
Are you
implying that she was not at the time?
She was disturbingly large compared to the rest of the cast. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? I think when you go and Joey Lawrence or the other Lawrence kid on The People, it's like five guys that are 5'2", and then a woman who's like 5'11".
She was taller. I wouldn't go with disturbingly large. That's
a
glass half full type of reference, half empty type of reference.
She's grown into
herself. So how do you get involved in it in a show like Boy Meets World? Was that one where you were already a fan and you reached out, or what happened?
I got the phone call. They found the demographics are actually, there was quite a bit of overlap. And at that time, during the Attitude Era, like, there were wrestling fans everywhere. It was just a matter of who would admit to being a fan. And so... the director thought there was a lot of overlap, and I think it was a pretty successful show. I know that I hear about it, and every half a year I get a check for 49 or 50 cents
for
my contribution on that show.
That syndicated a lot. That might go up a little bit now.
Yeah, it's been nice. You know?
Let's talk about the Attitude Era, because I'm fascinated by what happened.
The Attitude Era got me back into wrestling.
It was great, and that was... Now, the Attitude Era, for a lot of people who don't follow wrestling, if I'm not mistaken, and correct me if I'm wrong, when WCW came out, like, there were two different personalities that the two made, and WWE said, we want to go pretty far in this direction, and that being a little more raunchy, correct?
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily they wanted to go raunchy. They just kind of let... We just threw a lot of stuff at the wall, and so it stuck.
We had
the freedom to fail, and sometimes we failed spectacularly, but you never know what might stick. And for, you know, like, who would have thought that a sweat sock and a, you know, a sock puppet would, and it's to the point where they actually, the promoter of tonight's show is like, tell him Mr. Socko might make an appearance, you know? So I was known for doing some wild things during the course of my career.
Mr. Socko was the best.
Socko was cool, yeah.
Because it was like, if you wanted to prove that someone was crazy, how much crazier could you be than a giant in a ring talking with a sock puppet?
Well, I could, giving birth to a hand.
Well,
that was not one of the finer moments of the album.
Oh, it was the greatest.
It was one of those things that when we threw at the wall that not quite stick. Yeah.
So there was this John Henry guy, and then there was this old lady. And he, like, banged the old lady, and she got pregnant, and then there was this big thing where there's this very dramatic birth, and a hand comes out.
They did not know how to resolve Mae Young's pregnancy. Mae, I believe, was 88 years old, and I wasn't at that brainstorming meeting where it was decided that a hand would be given birth to.
That was the greatest. I mean, that was absolutely the greatest. I laughed for like an hour after I saw that. Oh my God, it's a hand!
Sometimes you'd laugh and sometimes you'd just get a real good look at your sneakers looking down the floor going, what type of company am I working for, man?
Which is great, because that era, like, if they approved that, what were some of the storylines that didn't get approved during that era?
I think they gave just... I've heard there were storylines that did not get approved, and it wasn't for sake of, you know, for lack of... couth. I was searching for an authorly word to
sure,
use.
Course,
yeah, we
course.
Did some many things that might be considered uncouth, but it was just we tried to see what would be best for business, what people would digest. You know, I mean, we were trying anything that worked. We were fighting for our lives. You know, every Monday night we were live head to head with Nitro, and they had a really strong program. And we were just trying different things. And you never knew. You took a guy who was who was not succeeding at all as a good guy or babyface, and you put Dwayne Johnson, you know, over there with the Nation of Domination, and all of a sudden he started clicking on all cylinders. And within a year, he had one of the biggest stars in the history of the business. So,
could you tell he had something extra, like he had a charisma?
The Rock, yeah.
In the beginning, I don't want to say hatred, I will go with animosity the crowd felt toward him was so strong that it overshadowed the charisma, to the point where in 1997 in Richmond, Virginia, Mankind, my character, as a bad guy, received such a thunderous round of applause when Rocky Maivia went for his crossbody off the top rope. Uh-huh. He hit it. I rolled through and came out with the mandible claw. It was such a staggering ovation that I got goosebumps. He was so despised by the audience. But as soon as he made the change, as soon as he started focusing some of that negativity and letting it out in a productive way, he was frustrated and angry with the crowd, and he let that be known in a really entertaining sense. He found something that worked for him, and right away, you know, as soon as he started talking about himself in third person, The Rock, we all knew he was onto something.
Oh, yeah.
Let's take a quick break, Rich, and can you hang out for...
Yeah, you got it, man.
Another segment. We got Mick Foley. He's big-time wrestling, returns to McCoy Stadium tonight at 8 o'clock. Tickets are available at the Paw Sox box office at McCoy or online at pawsox.com. Here's the CBS Sports Minute with Boomer, brought to you by Cambridge Savings Bank.
Hey, that was quite a rant there.
Not from this talk radio crazy.
Listen to replays of our shows.
Well, what was that?
And original podcasts.
Yeah, there we go.
Click on podcasts on our site at 98.5thesportshub.com. Toucher and Rich.
Self-help shenanigans.
On 98.5, The Sports Hub.
I'm a nice man. Yeah, I'm an ass man.
Yeah. 98.5, The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Big time wrestling returns to McCoy. Big time wrestling.
Put it back. I'm sorry. Yes. Fred.
I have him up.
A good song should be open to interpretation. You can sense the subtleties in there. I think everyone can just interpret them for themselves.
Ass is a metaphor for nuclear war. Big time wrestling returns to McCoy Stadium tonight at 8 p.m. featuring Mick Foley, Kevin Nash, the Ass Man Billy Gunn, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and much more.
Is that the greatest entering theme song ever for any wrestler?
I don't know. Greatest. I mean,
it's the funniest.
It's the most blatant. I don't know. All right.
So was his gig that like he just was obsessed with asses?
No, I mean, it's like Stone Cold. Steve Austin was the games master, right?
Yeah.
And he said he wanted something more along the lines of being like cold-hearted. And the WWE creative team at that time took the word cold, like literally, mm-hmm. and they produced like 25 names, all of which had to do with like Fahrenheit, you know, like Frosty McFreeze and Baron Von Ruthless. And I think in this case, you know, it's like, I don't know what I can say. He was a badass.
Oh, okay.
And someone took that to mean he loved every
asses.
Human. He could do anything with them.
So like,
I would have gone a different direction, personally.
But because, so there wasn't this thing that he was like, oh, Billy Gunn's distracted.
No, not at all. He was supposed to be. Look, like I said, we threw a bunch of stuff at the wall. Not all of it stuck.
I legitimately think it's very funny. I mean, but it would have been funnier if, like, you put a girl in the crowd, like, with a big ass, and it was like, Billy Gunn.
It's like his kryptonite.
He's dominating. Whoa! No, he's been distracted.
There was a storyline that dealt with his butt cheeks, and he was having someone apply some type of lotion, and it was actually poison ivy. And I thought, this is not one for the books, you know? Like,
see, that's why the Attitude Era was the best. And the thing is, too, about, I saw Beyond the Mat, which is a great documentary you were in.
Thanks.
And but one really good part of the movie didn't involve you, and that was where there's this young up-and-coming wrestler. He's finally getting his dream. It's coming true. He sits down with Vince McMahon. He's telling him, you are now officially going to be part of the WWE family. Your nickname will be Puke.
And Puke, Darren Drozdoff.
And you can almost see on his face that you go from, oh, this is the greatest moment of my life, to, oh, my God, I'm going to be known as Puke.
I've seen people walk out of meetings just with that dazed look where they realize their life is changing and not for the better.
Like, okay, so what was
look, the... Well, here's the... This is the difference. I had 12 years of experience when I got told my name by Mr. McMahon. He's like, did you hear your name yet? And I went, no, even though I actually had. He goes, in this business, we've had crushers, we've had destroyers, we've had executioners, but we've never had a mutilator. Mutilator.
Mutilator.
That's what you are. So my name was supposed to be Mason the Mutilator. And he goes, what do you think, pal? I said, it's good. It's really good. But what if? And then I threw the name Mankind out at him. And he said, I'm not sure I understand. I said, this way I could be talking about the destruction of mankind, the future of mankind. It could have a double meaning. And he just took a bunch of notes, you know, about the idea that I wanted an opening music and a different closing music where my heart would only be at peace after I'd caused human suffering. And I didn't even know what my name was. I went to WrestleMania in 96 because I was set to debut the day after WrestleMania, and my WrestleMania package just said Mutilator on it.
Yeah.
And when I came out for my match, they just went, Mankind! No Mutilator, nothing. And then I beat Bob Holly,
And in comes the piano music. And I was like, he went for every single thing I gave him.
Oh, my God.
I was putting it out there. And fortunately, I'm really thankful for that it took me 12 years to get there. Because if I'd gotten there 3 or 4 years in, he said I was Mason the Mutilator.
Sounds
good to me.
What was the most crushed you saw a guy coming out of a meeting after being told what their new persona was?
Oh man, you could look up Braden Walker on the internet, and some guy actually went through the time and trouble, had to spend dozens of hours creating the best Braden Walker. He was a good Wildcat Harris, I think that was his name, became Braden Walker. He lasted about 6 weeks. Sometimes it's all in the name. I'm telling you, give Steve Austin that Frosty McFreeze name, and I don't care if he's got the same music, the knee brace, the same move set. He's dead.
Yeah, but when you come out, like I think his name was Joe Lombardi, and he was like
Steve Lombardi.
Yeah. His job, you're like, I think a guy named Steve Lombardi doesn't stand a chance. That's what I'm guessing. So I watched the Andre the Giant documentary. I know things are different now, but how hard was the traveling when you were wrestling? Give us an example of what a typical week would be like.
It was 1,500 miles of driving, or, you know, I'm closing in on my 2 millionth mile on Delta.
Jeez.
But I wouldn't trade that for a daily commute.
Sure,
you know, especially here.
Yeah.
You know, like I grew up on Long Island, and my friend's father's commuted 4 hours a day. You know, we traveled 5 or 6 hours, but that was by highway.
Yeah.
A lot more. I mean, I just came off a trip. I was in Australia for 13 days, including the 3 days that it takes to get there and back, because it's about 35 hours each way from door to door, including the connections. And we flew every single day, and I was exhausted. And that's why I'm still haven't quite gotten over that trip. I mean, it's harder now at my advanced age than it used to be, but I have no problem driving. I like driving. You know, getting in the car at 11 p.m. last night and getting in at 4:30 a.m. was not a big deal.
But you're a big guy, and like we you know, a lot of these wrestlers, you know, we talked to a Big Show. We had him on, and his stories about traveling on a plane are ridiculous. Especially, I mean, so what kind of, like, were there ever any situations where you just, like, it was so painful to get on one of these commercial planes with no knee room with a guy your size to be able to make these trips?
As soon as I felt that magazine rack in my knee, I would scream in pain. So the guy who was... And if I was on a Southwest flight and, you know, it's that open boarding, I would always reach for my air sickness bag and act like I was on the verge of losing it.
So no one would sit next to you. So very smart. Very wise. The Beyond the Mat documentary, what I was just talking about, it's a great movie, and a lot of it focuses on you, and there was one scene in particular that it's probably the most talked about scene of the movie, and that is, we played the clip of you falling and one of your most famous falls, and you break that table, and it has your family there.
Two different matches. Where I broke the table was Hell in a Cell 98,
okay.
And the match for my family there was the I Quit match from January 99.
Okay, and that was a brutal... brutal. And it kind of put in perspective just how real the pain is that you guys have to go through. I mean, you know, once again, we're all sitting here laughing and having a good time because it's wrestling, but you step into that, and that the movie did a great job showing just how painful it is on a daily basis for you guys when you're wrestling.
And how it can affect the family.
And how it can affect the family as well. How much of that still hurts? Like, what's still hurting right now after all these years?
Well, you know, I was in a lot of pain for many years, and in the past 15 months, I've had my right hip and my right knee replaced. The last 2 years, I've lost 80 pounds, got in the pool, started doing DDP yoga, and I'm feeling a lot better than I have in many years. Who saw me walk up that flight of stairs? That wasn't bad, right? I mean, a year and a half ago, I would have been holding on to that rail, like pulling myself up, and then get it going down the stairs even worse on the joints. But when I got to Australia, you know, like I said, it's a long trip, and immediately when I go to step, you know, get off the plane, my body starts instinctively, like, seizing up because I'm so used to those
first several minutes being so tough.
Yeah.
And it takes me about four steps, and I realize, hey, I'm not doing that bad anymore. And I got off the flight, and I texted my orthopedic surgeon and thanked him for the difference that these operations had made. You know, I really should have had it, you know, 8 or 9 years ago. I went through a lot of pain that could have been. I mean, I'm not advocating doing anything that I did in wrestling. And structurally speaking, you know, dropping elbows off a ring apron onto the concrete is probably the worst.
Oh, sure.
Worst thing you can do. And it's not that I feel great. I just feel great by comparison to how I used to feel.
I hear stories from the NFL. We know some ex-players who talk about, you know, almost during the time when you were wrestling where there would just be bowls that almost look like bowls of Tic Tacs, of just like painkillers. Just, you got to get out there and play. What was it like in wrestling back in the day? Was there a lot of that going on?
Well, you know, some guys developed issues with substances. In my case, I was very realistic from the start. I was like, I don't have a great physique. I have a style that's going to lend itself to being in pain a lot, and I'm not going to take anything unless I really, really need it. And then I kept expanding my definition of really, really needing it. So I rarely took anything, you know. I did after the Cell match, you know. I mean, I was, you know, it was agonizing, and there were times when I was in so much pain that I took, you know, something for a couple days. But I escaped it, while a lot of other guys did not. But that's because I was very realistic from the start about what I could expect out of my style.
How was the WWE about taking care of you guys?
What? I didn't hear you. Yeah. No, they were actually good. You know, they took care of me. I only missed a few matches in my. I would plan on, like, people say, do you have an off season? I was like, yeah, it's called knee surgery, and so
that's a great point. Yeah. Like, I mean, was there ever a match that you were supposed to do, and like on the day of, you're like, I'm in too much pain to do this.
Well, you know what? I mean, we had a benefit that, you know, football, baseball, basketball doesn't have, is that, you know, we could work around a weakness. You know, right. The only thing I couldn't really work around was a torn abdominal muscle. And I did miss a couple of weeks in 93 because of that, because it's right in the middle of your body.
Oh, yeah.
There's really nothing you can do about it. And I couldn't believe that a torn muscle could cause that kind of pain. And you find out that that's the type of injury that literally ends football careers, where guys just can't. They lose that explosive power. But that was the most painful injury. But, I mean, I lost an ear in Germany and kept wrestling.
Now, how do you lose an ear?
Well, you know, we try to create the illusion of certain things happening. And so in order to create the illusion of hanging by your neck in the ropes, you actually have to hang by your neck in the ropes. That's how you create the illusion. And then you hope that you can stretch the ropes far enough. But if the ropes are not ropes and they're actually elevator cables covered in rubber, it's not easy to stretch. And so I pushed my way out, which apparently is the most painful way to lose an ear.
And it ripped your ear off your head?
Ear came off, yeah. You could actually see it. Somebody had a grainy handheld video. And, it's out there.
So you don't have a left ear or right ear?
A right ear. I'm missing part of my right ear. I had to abandon my dream of becoming a carpenter. There was no place to put the
pencil.
Okay. Oh, there you go. Is this thing on?
Yes.
It's a good missing ear joke.
All right. So how often are you wrestling now?
Oh, I don't wrestle anymore. I retired. My last match was the Royal Rumble in 2012.
And you're writing a lot too. As a matter of fact, you just told me something interesting. Like last night, you said that. What were you doing?
Yeah, I occasionally work on stories. I'll give my wife like a novella for her birthday.
Yeah, he said I write short stories, and I said,
way to save some money.
I said, are you writing a book? And he goes, no. I said, well, what do you do with them? And what'd you say?
Yeah, I write them for my wife. You know, I'll write stuff for people. Yeah, it's like a little personal gift.
Oh.
And I have the best, I have the nicest handwriting in the wrestling business.
Well, you have the calligraphy pack.
I have the calligraphy pack, yeah.
And your fanny pack. It's what you brought. Okay, so, and you also are obsessed with Christmas. That's one thing I do know about you. Absolutely obsessed with Christmas.
So, you know, when we go to a commercial break, I'll leave you with a little letter so that when I leave, I can be in the car and you'll be like, you know, that guy may have sucked in the ring, but he's got some nice handwriting.
Okay. All right. All right. And the other thing we learned real quick before we let you go, this is so strange, especially being someone from Long Island, but you are a massive Celtics fan.
Yeah, I have become a massive Celtics fan, and it's not Sean Grande's doing either, even though Grande can somehow, like, text, you know, like, complex paragraphs while a a conference finals is going on.
Yeah, he's obsessed with wrestling.
Dude, you just made his year.
And by the way, John Wallach fills in for Sean Grande.
True story.
And now you know that Sean's not going anywhere.
No, I'm well aware. But the best part is Oklahoma City is the stop where he'll meet with JR.
Yeah, you're right.
And JR get together. I had to fill in. Sean missed the Oklahoma City game, and I showed up. JR not happy.
No kidding. Not really? Happy. Did he get Sean a slot in the booth?
Usually he comes up and does a quarter with Sean. Sean and JR, I guess, showed up, saw me, and went, oh, damn it.
Well, in this case, my son, Huey, my youngest son, came home like 6 years ago and just said, I'm a Celtics fan. And he always said the Celtics were his favorite team. But this year, like, we got the league pass, and we were watching a Celtics game, I mean, just about every night they were on. So I probably caught 50 games this year.
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
It was a lot of fun. I realized, what was the guy in the Sixers who did so well in the MVP balloting?
Embiid? Joel Embiid? Yeah.
No, not Embiid. No, the rookie of the year.
Ben Simmons.
Yeah. My wife and I started having a heated argument over who was having a better rookie year, Tatum or Simmons. And I was like, how do you know all this? She's like, I watch this stuff every night that you're away. I'm watching this stuff. So we really enjoyed it. You know, I mean, I went to a couple games. I really got pulling for the team. You know, I thought they were always underdogs. Like, we were talking in the timeout about Marcus Smart. And I remember that game where they had the incredible comeback against Houston.
It was amazing. Yeah.
And James Harden was just like baffled. He had two or three turnovers.
Right in his head.
Yeah, buried himself
in his head.
Man, he buried himself. Yeah, it was cool. I love the team. And it's like. We're looking at them like they're the favorites in the East, but they're still somehow the underdogs.
I guarantee you that, I mean, obviously Grandy would flip out, but you've got to sit in with Grandy during a Celtics broadcast this year.
I'll tell you what, basketball is the toughest game to call. To me, it's the toughest.
Hockey.
Basketball and hockey, because it's moving around so quickly.
You're going to get things wrong.
But you're right. Both of those are tough.
Baseball's easy because you can tell 3-minute stories between pitches.
Football is little bursts
and then the 30 seconds. And basketball, I couldn't get into a rhythm. You know, it was like Max and Grande, you know, mm-hmm. I felt like I was hurting the crew instead of helping them.
If you want to, you can text with Wallach because he's got nothing to do during the game.
Sure. Anytime. I'm available.
Well, let's make it happen. We gotta hook that up.
He said he would miss Christmas with his family if he was given the Christmas Day
game. Is that true?
Yeah. Oh, I'd go. Sure, I would. The Celtics play the Sixers here in Boston. My family's usually in Philadelphia, but if Sean said I can't do the Christmas Day game, I'd be here.
Don't you think that's terrible? He has young kids.
I do. I have 9-year-old boys.
And to miss that day, you only have so many of those days where the innocence of Christmas.
I think you're an awful man.
You just made Fred's Day.
Yeah, I think it's terrible. I think it's something he'd live to regret.
We're now watching Christmas Day Classics on ESPN. Uh-huh. We're watching the WNBA and Christmas Day Classics. Yesterday we watched the Clippers and the Bullets. It was 1974.
Oh, no. Who was the star of that game?
What's that?
Who was the star of that game?
I think it was Elvin Hayes.
Wes Unseld?
Yeah, Wes Unseld is 6'7 with the outlet pass.
That's right.
One knee brace. And my son's like, I think the 70s game is overhyped. It's just a bunch of mid-range jump shots.
He's kind of right.
Back when they could do it.
That's true.
No one does that anymore.
Back when people could shoot mid-range jump shots. All right, Mick Foley, thanks so much for coming in. Big Time Wrestling returns to McCoy Stadium tonight at 8 o'clock, featuring Mick Foley, Kevin Nash. If you have a butt or an ass, Billy Gunn's going to be there to enjoy it. I saw Jim Duggan and much more.
Tickets are available at the Paw Sox box office, at McCoy, or online at pawsox.com. We appreciate it so much.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem.
Right, so we'll be right back. Here are the headlines.
Yeah,
I'm an ass man.
I'm telling you, the best thing with Billy Gunn would have been if, like, he was constantly distracted by Bud.
Oh, sure. Like, I mean, that everyone knew that that was their secret weapon against him, to hide somebody in the crowd.
Like, they had a chick with, like, a big ass that would be ringside, and she would just start popping it up and down, and Billy Gunn would be like...
And then they would all of a sudden, you know, do the people's elbow on him, and it would be all over with.
All right, listen to the 98... listen to 98.5 The Sports Hub and take us everywhere you go. Also, listen at home or in your office on your smart speaker and just say, play 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Mick Foley was obviously great. And by the way, he was not joking about his excellent penmanship. He did leave us a letter in calligraphy. Thank you for having me as a guest on the show. Have a nice day. So he's got that right there. Nice. On top of that, during the commercial break, we had to trigger one of these. Unfortunately, Fred, do you have me on pin it up there?
I have everything.
They hate us! Shut up ourselves!
I have to ask you guys. The Wiggy alarm was in full effect. We were sitting here while Mankind was sitting there writing that letter, looking down. Wiggy's waving his arms in the window, trying to get him to look at him, like doing all this.
Yeah. He was banging on the glass.
And
he
banged
on the glass.
And you know what? He came in here... And I think that he thought that Mick Foley was a different wrestler.
No, he said, is he Mankind or Cactus Jack?
Oh, okay. Oh, I thought he was, because then after he came in and started waving, we're getting our pictures with Mick Foley, and then Wiggy just goes, all right, I'll see you later. It doesn't get a picture. Like, he wanted to make a big scene and get his attention, which he didn't do, and then when he walked into the studio, he didn't end up not getting a picture with him and just left.
So, that's bizarre behavior.
I have no idea why.
I asked him if he wanted a picture, and he goes, I got to go to Zip Trip or something like that.
Okay. What? All right. So he's just jealous of us. Jealous of us.
And then, you know, this is not a negative thing about the company, but my wife is going to the airport, and she got an Uber, and the guy won't turn on the radio. Like, he, like, won't do it. Aren't you supposed to do anything that the person says?
No, I don't think so. I mean, if he believes that that's something that keeps him a safe driver, then I could see why he wouldn't do that.
I think you're absolutely supposed to put on the radio.
I don't know. I don't know the rule.
I mean, the rule would be turn on the radio. If someone wants the radio on, I mean, you can keep it at whatever volume you want. But, I mean, that's ridiculous.
I don't know. I have no idea.
I'm telling you what happened.
No. I just don't know if that's a rule or not. Have you ever been in an Uber
where they wouldn't turn the radio?
I've never requested them to.
You've never been going somewhere and there was something you wanted to hear, like a game or something, on the radio?
No. John,
have you ever requested the radio in an Uber?
Yes, and they've always turned it on.
Yeah, I mean, same with me.
You take Ubers a lot more than I do. I've only been there 5 or 10 times, but I've never had that problem.
I've never had that problem either. Like, you leave a game early or you're going to a game and you ask them to turn it on. I've never had someone say no. So, oh, he can't figure out how to get local radio. Well, doesn't seem like very ass man-ish.
What? he can't figure how to get local radio.
I mean, maybe he just has an unconstant ass radio.
That's the best. I love how they got from, okay, this guy's a badass, to turning him into someone who was obsessed with his own ass. I mean, can you just imagine that? That scene when that guy in Beyond the Mat is told that he's going to be WWE and then his name is going to be Puke because he can puke on command. They follow it up and they have him call his mother. And they film him telling him, Mom, I made it. I'm in the WWE. My name is Puke because I can throw up on command. And you just see his face go like, I can't believe I'm telling my mother this. I can't believe that out of all these years, this is what I'm going to be known as for the rest of my life. Puke, a guy who can puke on command.
Dan, go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys. I know that Sarge is hiding under the console right now, so So, hey, you creepy weirdo, get out of there.
I guess he's out of town.
Well, we had Sarge on for like a second the other day. And one of the women that books guests for us that I talk to real pretty frequently just texted me and said, I can't stand Sarge. That was the only text. Yeah, she's like, I can't stand
Sarge.
She's
our one-person focus group. She kind of like, all right, maybe you don't want to pop
Marty is an Uber driver. Marty, go ahead.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, what's up?
Well, I just want to put in my two cents about putting the radio on while for the Uber drivers. There's absolutely, you should have put the radio on. I'm a 4.95 Uber driver with about 4,000 rides, and I typically keep the music on as background music.
Sure.
Unless the person starts singing, then you got to turn it up. Or if there's a station, you got to do what they want. As long as it's not disrupting your driving and you're staying safe, absolutely turn the radio on.
It's not like asking someone, can you turn it up? Can you turn it up? Can you turn it up? It's like
right.
My husband's on the radio. I think she even said, my husband's on the radio. Can I hear his show? And I was like, no.
I would love someone to do that. Oh, that's your husband? Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, well, I guess not.
What if it's on? What if it's on now and hears you talking about him?
Oh, boy. What's he going to do? He's an Uber driver. He's been properly
vetted. Give your wife one star, and then it drops it.
Okay, now she's listening.
Okay.
Maybe there was a call on his cell phone saying, hey, James, crank it up. I mean, I'm, maybe it's just a situation of being an ass man and just being distracted by the whole thing.
Maybe that was the whole
thing. I'm an ass man.
There.
Yeah, I'm an ass man.
This video, there's like a compilation video of some of like his moments in the ring. And there's one where he's just sitting there and he's like checking out China's like, whoa!
Really? Okay, so he was really into ass.
Well, I mean, hers, yeah. Not all of them, but that. Listen, I didn't watch Billy Gunn back in the day, but I've just seen this video. And he's like, whoa!
See, that, if I wrote for them and there was an ass man, it would constantly be distracted by ass.
But everyone's saying that he was obsessed with his own. Like, he wanted it to be perfect, and he would, like, show it off. But there's one where he shows him, like, looking at China going, whoa!
I don't know. Like, it was kryptonite. Like, you would bring, like, a female wrestler into the ring, and he'd be pinning a guy. And go, one, two. And then he, like, looks up, and he's like, whoa! Asses! All right. Well, it's never to be. Maybe they'll take that idea and use it over at the Paw Sox tonight. We will be back in just a moment.